So, if we could gather up. I would like to welcome you all back from our coffee break. My name is Lars Goren Forsberg. I'm a representative from Lupia, the world's first DNSSEC registrar. We will continue with the same kind of presentations as before the coffee break. And it's all about the vendors. I think that Richard Bedelgrim from OpenDNSSEC is the first off. So welcome up on stage, Richard.
Hi everyone, my name is Richard Bedelgrim and I'm the project manager of OpenDNSSEC. Some of you may have heard of OpenDNSSEC and some haven't. We have quite new software that's out on the market, but we haven't released version 1.0 yet, but it will come out in November the 23rd, but it's a new software, but it's based on the experience from previous operations and from standardization work. Basically, OpenDNSSEC is a complete software suite that takes care of the automatic signing and key handling for DNSSEC operations, and that is what OpenDNSSEC focuses on. So, tell you more here. So the question, why did we start to work on the OpenDNSSEC project? The problem was that there was no tool for good key management. We had to script everything together to have everything working. You didn't have any good policy handling. You also wanted to have some hardware acceleration if you wanted to have a very quick signing of your zones. Otherwise, it was just in software, and perhaps it could take for hours just to sign your zone, etc. Another thing was that we wanted to have DNSSEC to deploy as fast as possible, so maybe we should provide a software that will accelerate the market. And we thought that by making our own software and giving it to the market, it will be another competitor on the market and make other vendors to speed up their deployment. And we also wanted to have more uses of DNSSEC. So we wanted to have something that's free, available, and that everyone can use. So we're trying to integrate as much interfaces so it would be easy to deploy DNSSEC in your own environment. And as I said, it's based on the work from previous operations. So we gathered all the requirements from the participants, and then we formed this new software based on that. It's a collaboration between Nominet, that's .uk for those who don't know that, and Elnet Labs, the workers behind LDNS, Unbound, etc. And then we have ourselves, .sc, AI Cray, which have worked on the standardizations process for quite a while. John Dickinson, as well, working on the standardization process. Surfnet, a university network provider in Holland, and as well as SIDN.nl. Some quick overview of what OpenDNSSEC do. It simplifies the process of assigning one or multiple zones. So just try to automate everything, and you just start up the process and we have assigned zone afterwards. And another thing is that it reduces the workload on the operator, because you don't have to type all the commands, go to your server room each month. Will do everything automatically. One other good thing is that it's open source software, so it's based on the BSD license, so other vendors can take OpenDNSSEC, integrate it into their existing products. Even if it's protected and not open, they can still use OpenDNSSEC and distribute it, sell it, and do whatever they want with OpenDNSSEC. And that was because we wanted everyone to start using DNSSEC, or trying to make DNSSEC products much better so they can use stuff from OpenDNSSEC in their own software. It should also be simple to integrate OpenDNSSEC into your existing infrastructure so that you don't have to throw everything away just because you want to do DNSSEC. And finally, you also want to have a good storage of your keys, so you don't want to have your keys lying on the hard disk. You want to have them protected, you want to know where they are. And maybe you want hardware acceleration, so the signing process goes much, much more quicker than doing it in the CPU. And we use that by using the PKCS11 interface. So we'll come back later what that is. And here's the general overview of what OpenDNS look like. So we have, you start by having an unsigned zone, when you have that zone in your machine. And you also have, you can specify a policy that you pass on to the, we have one part that's called the enforcer, which upheld this policy, create keys, etc. And it then provides this configuration to the signer engine, which takes the input zone, sign it, and then passes it on to the auditor. We also have this auditing ability to just, so if you enable it, in, it can check your signed zone and compare it with the input zone. So you have a look on if something is missing, is the policy upheld by the system? So is the key rolled regularly as it should, etc. So it, and it could also stop the zone distribution if something is went wrong in the signing process, or if you did something wrong with the system, so you don't put out a bad zone on the internet. And if you start first with the policy, the main goal is that the user can specify a policy that it can use. It can either be for one zone or for multiple zones. It depends on your configuration, what you type in the configuration files. But we also supply a default policy that you can use. So it's a general recommendation on good values to use. So the key rollover are done in properly ordered, because you don't want to rush the key rollovers to be done as quickly as possible, because you can't do it in a second, because you have to have all these safety marginals. So that's something that you configure in the policy, so you, the system will know how your environment looks like, and everything can be done in a safe way. But you can also specify like the key algorithms, key lengths, etc. that you want to use, if you want to use NSEC, NSEC3, and so on. And another good thing is that you can also, if you have like, Lars Göran has here 500,000 zones, we can also share keys between all the zones. And that makes it easier to store all, you can have a HSM that can only store a few keys, but you still can have many zones because all the zones are sharing the keys. But that's a configure option that you can put in the CASP, as you call it. Once you have the policy, we import it to the system, we have the CASP enforcer. It's a module that that knows the policy and does everything according to it. So generate the keys that you want in the HSM, make sure that we pre-publish them at the correct time before we're going to have a rollover, so that we can do the rollover as quickly as possible. You have all the TTLs, the signature lifetimes, all that are done in the CASP enforcer. When that is done, it's passed it. Oh, then we also have the HSM. And as I said, we use the PKCS11 interface. The reason to use the PKCS11 interface is that you as a user can choose which HSM that you want to use. So you're not tied to a particular vendor. You can choose any hardware vendor that uses this interface. And it's quite common to use this one in the industry. The HSM is used for key storage and also for hardware acceleration. And just to simplify the process, because PKCS11 as it is, it's not as quite as simple just to type the command sign and will do sign, so it's much more handling around it. So we also put it into our own library that we use internally within OpenDNSSEC. Another issue is that, well, it's our software, but now you're required to buy hardware. But we don't want that to be like that. So we have a possibility to have a software HSM called Soft HSM. So you can still use OpenDNSSEC, and everything can be done in software if you want to evaluate OpenDNSSEC, or if you don't have such a high security requirements that you want to have your keys in the hardware. Then we have Soft HSM, because now everything is done in software. Your keys are still in the software. Your keys are still on the hard disk, but it makes it possible to evaluate OpenDNSSEC without having the requirement to buy HSMs. Or if you decide that later on we first deploy OpenDNSSEC and in 1 year we buy our HSM and replace it, we roll the keys over to the next HSM, because you can have multiple repositories, as we call it. So you can have one really secure HSM for some types of your zones, and you can use another HSM for your less secure zones. So then we have the Signer engine. It takes the configuration from the CASP enforcer and also takes the input zone, and then it does all the automatic signing of the zone. So it can, for instance, if we have already signed the zone one time before and we do another round of the signing, we can reuse all the signatures that are not too old but are recently new, so they can still be used. But so that saves a lot of computing power, just to reuse old signatures and instead of computing new ones. But this also depends on what the user have configured, because you can't configure just to drop all the signatures all the time. Then you also want to spread the workload over time. So if you start signing at this moment, all your signatures won't expire at the same time in the future, because then you have to do all the workload at once. So we have something called that jitter. So you spread all of your signature expirations over time. So over time you will have a more even workload on your system, and signatures will expire randomly. The Signer engine also maintains the NSEC and NSEC3 and does all the parsing, all the sorting, adding the NSEC or sorting NSEC3 order, adding NSEC chain. And it also updates the SOA serial number depending on your configuration, because some people like to keep the same SOA serial as you had in the input zone, and that makes that so you can't distribute new zone, because if you are updating the signatures but you haven't received a new zone with a new serial, you can't output it, because in order to output a new zone, you need to have a new SOA serial for input. And then you can have other like timestamps, Unix timestamps, date counter, counters, etc. It's configurable. And then we also have option to run an auditor on this. You don't have to have the auditor, so you can just run it and just pass everything out that the OpenDNS executive did. But if you enable the auditor, you have a possibility to stop the zone distribution if something went wrong, or if you did something wrong with your commands, etc. So what does the auditor checks? It checks that we haven't dropped any resource records, so make sure that everything from the input zone actually comes out on the other side. Make sure that the policy follows, so we get a note that, hey, you haven't rolled the keys, so we probably shouldn't call the operator. And also it's written in Ruby, so we make sure that we have not shared the same code base, that we have one implementation that uses another library to verify the signatures, to just check everything so we don't do the same mistakes. And it's also written by another person, so we are trying to really separate the two functionalities from each other. And then a little bit more about HSMs. So why should you use one? One first thing is that security. It's a verifiable security, because some HSM vendors have FIPS levels that we have talked before. And you know where the keys are. You know that the keys are in the HSM and not somewhere on your hard disk drive, and if your system get compromised, they can't get to the keys because they are securely stored in the HSM. Another reason would be to use the speed. There are some HSMs that are just on a USB stick. It takes one signature per second. We can use another vendor that does 13,000 signatures per second. You can even add more, like three HSMs together of that type, and you can get up around 40,000 signatures. But all this depends on what level of security you want to use, how big your budget is. It can be from $50 up to $25,000. But you also have to remember that even though you're using an HSM, you can still get bad data out from your signing. Because if you put some bad stuff in the input zone, that stuff will go up or out on the other side. So you can still break stuff, but you have to do it on the machine. So remember to protect your host as well. They can't extract the keys, but they can abuse it. So remember to protect your host. Well, in most cases, we expect that OpenDNSSEC will be like a bump in the wire. So you have some kind of provisioning system, IPAM solution, registry solution that creates your zone. And then you feed up in the NSSEC with this zone, and then you output the signed zone out to your secondaries, your slave servers. So that's basically about how we think that OpenDNSSEC will be used. And of course, this requires additional software, because currently OpenDNSSEC only takes file in and file out and inbound AXFR. So if you want to do something more, you probably want to add, if you want to distribute your zone, your signed zones, you have to have a name server that loads that zone and then can distribute it forward. So it would probably look like something like that. So for the inbound, we have support AXFR with notifies and TSIG. And for outbound, we only have the signed file. So yeah, but we have a callback, so you can reload it into your name server that you want to use. But in the future, we're hoping to have this more integrated and have our own inbound and outbound adapters, so you can configure IXFR, AXFR, etc. But in this version, we only have file in, file out, or AXFR in and file out. And this is the current release plan. We had the first alpha release in July, and then we had a beta release in October, and we have since then done a release every Friday or sometimes Saturdays. But we try to do it every week, so you have a fresh new test version to run on. And we expect to have version 1.0 in November 23rd. And then we start focusing on deploying OpenDNSSEC in our own environment before we start to develop the second version of OpenDNSSEC. So currently the plan for OpenDNSSEC is, for .se is to migrate from our own solution, take the keys from that solution, take it over to OpenDNSSEC and be in production in the beginning of the next year. And the same plan is for Nominet. They're going to use OpenDNSSEC as well. They're going for NSSEC 3 without RFC 5011. Probably you have heard in the presentation about their deployment. And we have .nl. They're doing some evaluation and testing on software. We haven't heard any release plan from them. But and then we also, so that's how it looks currently for us. And questions to take later on. So. Thank you, everyone.
So, thank you, Richard. As Richard said, and I was supposed to say, we'll handle all of the questions after all of the presenters are done. I think we'll have some nice time for that. Well, I like open software. So we're going to skip right over to Shane Kerr, who's going to have a talk about Bind 9.7. I think they call it DNSSEC for humans.
Good morning. I'm Shane Kerr. I'm here from ISC. I'm normally the Bind 10 guy, but today Bind 10 is vaporware. Bind 9.7 is in beta right now, so I'm here to talk about 9.7 today. When ISC was trying to think of what the focus for the next version of Bind was going to be, we realized that now is an important time for DNSSEC. We also realized that our tools were written from the point of view of protocol engineers and technical guys, and they reflected that. So they were very difficult even for us to use. So. The goal for 9.7 was to make it something, well, as we say here, that a normal person could hope to use. And I think you saw this morning through a lot of the other presentations. Almost every presentation described how it was simple to use. And I think we should take a lot of credit for that, because our earlier tools were not simple to use. So it's kind of a motivation for that. So anyway, let's jump in here. So I confess I didn't make this presentation either, so we'll see how we go. I don't need to explain why we want DNSSEC. We all love and know DNSSEC here. Right, so here's an example of the simple, straightforward, easy-to-use way that you would use Bind today. So in order to to generate a set of keys, you need to run this command two separate commands here. And none of these options are optional. So you have to specify the signing algorithm, the bit length, and blah, 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 blah. It's quite cumbersome. I was talking to someone earlier. You have to remember, you have to go and look at the man page basically every time to figure out how to do this stuff. This is where that 24 pages that Cricket was talking about comes from, how to actually get this stuff to work. And of course, we have an even more complicated process if you're using NSEC3. So as we say here, the arguments are required, but now you have to remember NSEC3, RSA, SHA1, which is the abbreviation for the algorithm. Right, so we're still command line tools. ISC doesn't have GUIs, we don't have web pages. We're not morally opposed to them, we just haven't implemented, and other people have implemented tools on top of our stuff. So all of these examples are command line stuff from the Unix or even Windows. We still require command line. But as you can see, it's a lot simpler now. If you're not using NSEC3, you just tell the name of the zone. And then for the KSK, you have a single option. So it's a lot simpler now. Right. The signing a zone once you've got your key is also a lot simpler now. It's a single command. You don't have to remember options. You don't have to modify your zone. If you do things the old way, it will continue to work. That was also a goal. We didn't want people going through an old how-to to all of a sudden get a bunch of weird error messages and things like that. But as you see, now the keys are automatically imported into the zone. You don't have to do anything magic when you re-sign it either. You don't have to remember how it was signed and things like that. Just say re-sign it. We actually had a process in 9.6, the previous version, the one that most people are using now, I hope, where Bind could re-sign zones. It would load them in, and then as keys got to the point where they were going to expire, it would sign them and send out and then provide the new version of the zone. The problem with this was that no one knew how to do it because it wasn't actually documented anywhere. It was in the release notes, but it was kind of a tantalizing clue. If you wanted to do this, you would see that it was in the release notes, and then you have to go read the source code to figure out how to get it to work. The lead engineer for the project was he was really excited when he found out that it would do this, and he actually had to ask the engineer who wrote the code how to do it. So in 9.7, it's going to be a slightly easier process. But the basic idea for re-signing is that you sign your zone, and then you tell Bind to treat it as a dynamic zone. Right now, you can use NSUpdate, a little command line tool, and update the contents of your zone at runtime. If you configure your zone that way, with 9.7, if you configure your zone that way and it has a signature, it will and the zone is signed, it will keep those up to date. So as signatures expire, new ones will be created. So that's cool. And as it says here, the format of all these key format files are proprietary, meaning there's no standard for this. We extended ours a little bit to include a little extra data to make it a little easier to understand what's going on there. We also support 5011, which is useful on a resolver side. If you're validating DNS, you need to have trust anchors. And the ITF published a mechanism so that the trust anchors could be automatically updated. So as a new one comes online, your resolver will get the information from the authoritative server. So you don't actually have to subscribe to mailing lists and update your trust anchors and things like that. And basically what we do is we just have a little file that stores these, and every time one gets put in place, we just store it. So once you start this process, it's completely automatic to the user. You don't have to change anything. A few people mentioned DLV earlier. DLV is a service and a protocol. It's a way to manage your trust before the root is signed, basically. So with DLV, it's DNSSEC look-aside validation, which basically means that when you have a resolver and you're looking up a name, you'll try the normal process of DNS resolution. If it doesn't find a secure answer, it will then also look in another server, dlv.isc.org usually, and say, do you have any secure information for the zone? And then it will use that if it's available. So it's very useful in the case where your parent isn't signed. So today you can use it for a comm zone and things like that. It used to be that on the resolver side to set this up, you had to go to a web page and cut and paste and put the information in there, which wasn't a complicated process, but it was a manual process. For 9.7, we're shipping our trust anchor with the code, so all you have to do is turn it on, and then DLV validation will work. We're not turning it on by default, but as it says there, we do ship the key. Oh, and I answered the question before, at the last bullet there. Right. Because of the way Bind works, as I said, the engineer who was the lead engineer on the project started looking at the re-signing process, and it works by running a dynamic zone. So he actually looked at the process for setting up a dynamic zone and realized that this was also quite cumbersome. So you need to configure some method of trust between your updater and your server itself. And that also involved, again, cutting and pasting information and updating multiple files. That's all been simplified. You should be able to run a single command and then have everything magically work on your server, on the machine itself. Of course, if you want to do dynamic updates from another machine, you do have to copy the shared secret to that machine. But if you're doing it, as a lot of administrators are, just on a single box, maybe you're setting up a combined DHCP and DNS server or something like that. It's a very simple way to set it up. Well, yeah, as I said there, the main motivation for this was to make it easier to enable this re-signing process, which is quite sexy, actually. We do today ship our DNS libraries. So in theory, you can use these with other applications. And as it says there, we've extended them a little bit so that get adder info and get name info, which are basic commands you'll use to do DNS lookup. But now they have some information provided to applications about DNSSEC. Traditionally, with DNSSEC, from the application point of view, you either get a failure or not. You get a server error, which is not so helpful to the user to understand what's going on. Especially as we expect the case to be in the short-term future, that there's going to be a lot of errors in DNSSEC, mostly expired keys, but also other broken configuration. And having applications be aware of DNSSEC will make it a little bit less painful for the user. If you can see, there was a validation error, that tells you a little bit more, especially if you're an ISP administrator or something like that. It gives you a little more information to actually start solving the problem and contacting the owner of the zone. Right. So we PKCS11 is how we work with HSMs, hardware security stuff. We updated our documentation for this again so that hopefully someone other than the guy who wrote it can read it. We added another. We don't support too many hardware security modules. We're a open source company. We don't have a lot of money. These products, as you saw, can be quite expensive. So we basically support what our customers ask for. If a hardware vendor was to come for us and ask for us to support their stuff, well, we'd gratefully take a donation of any hardware available, but we basically support what we can. So we've added support for an additional one, basically because some of our customers wanted it. We also have a patch to OpenSSL, which is kind of the standard library that everyone uses but nobody likes, for PKCS11 stuff. We've added two engines. One is signing only, and the other is to use it as a crypto accelerator. So depending on the performance characteristics and how you actually want to use your HSM, you can apply this patch. We're trying to get it merged into the main OpenSSL trunk, but it's non-trivial to work with them. Yeah, and we also added separate command line tools for doing operations directly. So every HSM vendor has their own proprietary tools for this, which, to be honest, are usually better than the ones that we ship because they provide access to the full functionality of whatever the hardware does. But we thought it would also be nice to have a generic way to do these operations. So these will be things like creating a new signature and storing it in, or creating a new key and storing it in the HSM and things like that. Well, asking the HSM to store a new key and this kind of stuff. So we have tools for that. Right, so how do you get this stuff? Well, we have a beta now, and I was just told that beta 2 came out yesterday. So we expect, the way our release process goes is we go through a full alpha beta release candidate cycle. So there'll be at least one more release before we finish this process. I think we're done adding features now, so it's just bugs now, if there are any. If there's no bugs, then the release will come out sooner. If there's more bugs, it'll come out later. But we expect it to come out within the next month or so. We have a formal beta program now, which we've never had in the past. So if you do want to download this and use it and give us feedback, we would much appreciate that. And if you might get a cool T-shirt like this one. I notice I'm the only one in the room wearing a T-shirt this time, which feels very strange for me. Okay, yeah, as I said, December we're going to release it. That's as always, of course, depending on our number of bugs, but we don't anticipate many major problems. So we're looking forward to it, and it's going to be good. It's not the level of ease of some of these other products we saw where you can just click on a few web pages, but it should make it so that any kind of average Unix network administrator should be able to run DNSSEC now going forward with just bind. So that's it. And I'll be taking questions later.
So thanks, Shane. We will be moving on with this track, hearing some things from Men and Mice, Carsten. After his presentation, we will need a little bit of setup time, but he will do a small demo. So, welcome, Carsten.
Thank you.
There we go.
Hello, good morning, everyone. I'm Carsten from Men and Mice. I also have something to say about DNSSEC. It's maybe a little bit different than the others, but it's good to be at the end and have the others first, because we are kind of an umbrella for some of the other solutions that we have already seen. About our company, we are headquartered in Iceland. Iceland is still existing, despite some rumors, and actually we are doing good. We are focusing on DNS since 1994, and our company is around for 20 years, so we might be one of the oldest companies in this space. We do DNS, and we do the IP address and DHCP management, but today I will mostly talk about DNS, of course. We don't do our own DNS engines, and we also don't do DNS signers. We have what we call an overlay solution, meaning that we have a management layer on top of existing solutions. So we run on top of standard bind, we run on top of Windows DNS servers, and also we run now on, we support DNSSEC solutions. And I will come to that later. This is how we see us. There's on the bottom, we see here the DNS servers, DHCP servers, and routers and other stuff. And we have a DNSSEC management interface where we have the DNSSEC key management and stuff like that. And that interfaces with the Menomai suite, which is a central component that keeps track of all the DNS data and some configuration options like policies you might want to use for DNSSEC. And it keeps also like a change history and who has done what at what point of time, access rules, who is allowed to make changes to what zone, to what IP address, or to which source record in the system, and so on. So here's a workflow, how we see it with our system is the DNS management team is doing some changes to a zone using a GUI management tool, which is easy to use, and hopefully I can demo that later if the technique permits. That is being sent to a system called Metamize Central, and that generates basically an unsigned zone. And that unsigned zone is sent to a DNSSEC zone signing and key management system, which can be various options that you can use there. And back comes the signed zone, still goes back to Metamize Central, that does also some security checking and some auditing on that, and that is then deployed to what we call a DNS server controller, and the DNS server controller has the knowledge to deploy that on an actual DNS server. The DNS server controller is different, like if you deploy to bind, it's working different than to Microsoft DNS server, for example. And then we end up with having a signed zone on the DNS server. So what can be this DNSSEC zone signing and key management part? That can be the open DNSSEC, and that is what I have on my laptop that I can demo you. But it can also be Secure 64. We support that directly. We also support the zone signing toolkit from Holger Zuliger, which is part of the bind contribution. We support plain bind 9, so that was Shane demonstrated with bind 9.7. It's also possible, and we support the Windows 2008 R2 DNS server, which is also DNSSEC capable. So what we want to give the customer is basically a choice. You can choose from any of them, but you still always have the same interface. You don't need to learn. You can start slowly. You can maybe start with bind or start with open DNSSEC with the software HSM to do the first steps, which is not very cost intensive because it's open source. And later, if you have more customers and bigger needs, you can switch to Secure 64 because it's more secure and more faster. And you have basically good options to switch between systems there. And you don't need to retrain your stuff because it's all looking the same, because we like having the umbrella in front of this and make all the different DNSSEC solutions look like the same solution. So this is the same picture that we have seen from Richard, how the open DNSSEC works. And this is on the next slide what we add to that. So we have the Metamize Central that verifies first and then writes an unsigned zone that is creating the input to open DNSSEC. And also the Metamize Central selects the policy for the zone. For how to sign it, and the policy itself is configured in OpenDNSSEC. And then OpenDNSSEC does its magic, does its work, brings out a signed zone, and that is then being sent to the Metamize DNS server controller, which has the knowledge how to speak to the DNS server and deploys that to the DNS server. The Metamize system can be used in DNSSEC in the middle solutions, like we have seen that before, but it can also be run without being in the middle, that is being a system that directly provisions authoritative DNS server without the need of a hidden master. So you have both options, whatever you like to use. This is how it looks like in the zone list, and you see we have two fields there, open DNSSEC, and DNSSEC policy, and there you see which zones have DNSSEC enabled and which have not. And this is if you switch on DNSSEC, you just make a tick mark that you want to use open DNSSEC on a zone, and you can also do that on multiple zones by just selecting multiple zones and set a tick mark once for all the zones, and then you have a drop-down box with all the possible policies in there, and then the background, it configures open DNSSEC with all the zones and the requested policies and waits for the signed zones to appear and then is deploying the signed zones to the DNS server. And this is now how the zone looks like in our GUI interface with DNSSEC enabled with all the DNSSEC records in there. And there's a feature in there called hide DNSSEC records, where you can just hide all the DNSSEC stuff in the zone because it clutters the zone. If you want to make changes to a zone, you don't want to see this because you don't make manual changes to that. It's merely there to, for troubleshooting reasons, but most DNS administrators, they don't want to see that. They trust the system to make that the auditor makes sure that everything works fine in DNSSEC. They just want to make changes in the normal DNS zone and with the minimized system and the hide DNSSEC records function enabled. You see even a DNSSEC enabled zone as just a plain zone. You see just the plain normal DNS records there and can make changes there. And if you save back, then the open DNSSEC or the other DNSSEC systems that we support make sure that it's re-signed and deployed again to the DNS server. Then we have a tool built in, which is called the DNS Expert, which makes all kinds of checks. Like it checks if there is a pointer record for an A record. It has about 220 different checks of DNS health. And it also reports on the DNSSEC zones if there's something wrong with that. Like if you have an error in there. For example, here I had no MX records, or if you have an MX record pointing to a host name that is not resolvable, something like that. It's also a good tool to keep the zones clean. And that is, I think, more important even with DNSSEC, because if your normal DNS is not clean, and then you need to troubleshoot DNSSEC, it's even more complicated. So what is the benefits? We provide a free choice of the DNSSEC signer of policy management and the DNS server engine. You're not locked in any particular software solution here. We support DNSSEC with OpenDNSSEC, with Secure64, with Plain Bind, and with Windows 2008 R2 DNS Server. And in addition to that, we have a fine-grained access control in the system. We have a history trail where you can see who has done what changes at what point of time. The sanity checks prevent human errors in there, and it all works in integration with an IP address management and DHCP management if you need that or will like to use that. And then what we call a non-intrusive approach, because we sit on top of existing servers, you can just install our system on existing Windows infrastructure or existing Unix bind infrastructure without any downtime, because you just install the server controller agent and then you can start managing everything from the GUI instead of going to the zone files and do everything manually on the command line. Questions we take later, I heard. So let's see if I can do a demo here. So what we see here is the minimized management system, the GUI interface. It's a Windows application, but as you see, it also runs on Linux and other Unixes is fine, as long as it's an Intel processor. And here I have, in this case, I have a bind server, which is my authoritative server. I just in my little laptop here, I have just one server, but it can be also many servers in there. And in the back end, I have a configuration of OpenDNSSEC, the latest beta from last Friday, that is configured to work with the minimized system. So basically how it works is if I create a new zone, so DNSSEC in Stockholm.example, I select the master server, which is only one server that I have here. I can directly here click that I want to use OpenDNSSEC to sign this zone, and then I can select policy. For this, I first will create an unsigned zone and later show you how to sign that zone. But I can even directly create a signed zone with that. Hit on create, and now we get a spreadsheet-like view of the information. It also already generates an SOA record here on top and one NS record for the one DNS server that I have. Of course, if I have multiple DNS servers in the system, it will create an NS record for each DNS server. And then I can type in my DNS information. Let me create just three records for the sake of having some data in there. An MX record, pointing to mail. So this is now one NS record, one SOA record, two A records, one MX record in the system here. You see the missing dot is not a problem because it automatically prints in gray the origin of the zone. You see already what you get. I save this back to the servers now, and now we have an unsigned zone that is deployed on the server and it's running live and can be used. And we see here on the top, this is the zone. It's called type master, and OpenDNSSEC is set to no. If I want to now enable DNSSEC signing, I go into the properties of this zone, make this tick mark in OpenDNSSEC, select my policy, I keep default here, say OK, and now in the background it configures OpenDNSSEC for using this zone. And I'm using the soft HSM here, so it's a small laptop, it takes a while. Now I wait until it tells me that the zone is secure. That is on my laptop, takes a few seconds, but if you have a hardware accelerator or a good server, it's quite quick. So now you see type is now master secure. Now it's DNSSEC enabled and also deployed on the DNS server already. If I now open the zone, we have by default this high DNSSEC records in there, so I don't see the DNSSEC. But if I switch that off, I see all the DNSSEC records in there. And you see here the comments. Also, if you have tested with OpenDNSSEC, you will remember this layout with the comments here that is written from OpenDNSSEC. And if I go on the command line here and do a zone list from the OpenDNSSEC KSM utility, we see that the zone is now in here with policy default. I can also do it the other way around. If I want to get rid of DNSSEC for whatever reason, I just untick here, and it releases that from OpenDNSSEC, and also it strips out all the DNSSEC records here, and if I now open it, it's a plain zone again, and no OpenDNSSEC anymore in there. And if we go back here, do the list again, we see that DNSSEC in Stockholm is not in the list anymore of OpenDNSSEC. So where are we currently? OpenDNSSEC is not in a release stage, so we're still waiting for the release and testing. Currently also, this is a one way. That is, we can, from the Man and My System, configure OpenDNSSEC. I would like to also have that a full two-way tool, meaning that if there is some changes on the command line in OpenDNSSEC, that is reflected in the Man-and-Mice tool. For that, we need maybe some more adapters in OpenDNSSEC, that OpenDNSSEC can report changes automatically to Man-and-Mice. I will talk to the OpenDNSSEC team later, either this week or by email, and hope for the release or soon after we have a good integration there. That's the end of my presentation and my demo, so then we can have the question and answer section, I guess. Thank you.
Yeah, so thank you, Carsten. So in the schedule for today, we actually said that we were going to have lunch between 12 and 13, and that's not going to happen. It's going to be between 12 and 13:20. We're going to put in an extra speaker from Blue Cat now instead of after lunch to get some more information about their DNSSEC products. So, welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Hi there, my name is Chris Parker James. I work for Blue Cat Networks as product manager. Today I'd like to start off talking a little bit about who the company is and our main focus, which is IP address management, and how we tied that into our DNSSEC solution. So Blue Cat was founded in 2001 to sort of come up with a better DNS solution to automate the configuration of ISC's bind. we call this our Adonis appliance. And subsequently in 2005, with the need to sort of manage growing network environments and having multiple DNS servers and the emergence of IPAM, we came up with our Proteus appliance, which is basically a management layer, which you've seen by several other vendors today. It's basically where you see the management of all your core network services, DNS, DHCP, et cetera, from a single unified source. So in 2009, we came out with our DNSSEC integrated solution, which lives at that management layer and pushes out to all of our Adonis appliances. So basically, I mean, without being too redundant, in terms of an authoritative DNSSEC solution, basically you need a name server that supports all the DNSSEC standards, creating the keys and then subsequently signing the zones. So that represented significant amount of challenges in terms of the manual processes that we were simplifying before, and now having the additional complication of DNSSEC and the configuration of that and the management of that. So in terms of signing zones, rolling keys over, maintaining chains of authorities, and basically just managing the distribution of those keys to all those involved when chains of trust don't exist. So in terms of the challenges that we've seen dealing with some of the clients that we've done some testing with DNSSEC with, there's a lot of challenges involved here in terms of key management, delegation, dealing with multiple administrators, some of the other things like misconfigured firewalls, debugging when you've got a significant more amount of logging going on, additional CPU required and looking at HSM modules and whatnot. And subsequently, I mean, the big client rollout that's involved as well in terms of, Windows support and, having client resolvers. So some of the things that we looked at when we developed our solution were basically, the key RFCs here and subsequently NSEC3 validation as well, FIPS compliance and using the proper OpenSSL libraries and HSMs. Levels of automation, key rollovers, authoritative signing, basically all the things that we've seen today in the most, easy and in terms of easy deployment and ease of use for the administrator. So just I'll go through a quick review of IP address management as a lot of the tools and advantages that we've developed over the past 2 years in this space we apply to our DNSSEC solution. So stuff like monitoring and reporting and integration with the day-to-day network administrator's tasks and having DNSSEC and all of the challenges that it presents integrated within that. So IPAM is basically about taking your core network services. In this case, the most relevant would be DNS, and allowing your operation, your organization to really not have to deal with all of these challenges on a day-to-day basis. So, I mean, DNSSEC really is just going to be an extension of your existing DNS deployment. So, as such, we can really leverage a lot of these tools in terms of delegated administration. When you're going to have significant amount of administrators who may not understand the more technical concepts of DNSSEC, they're just doing day-to-day stuff. so in terms of leveraging that to make that solution that much easier. So the other big thing with IPAM is that bringing in advanced auditing and reporting and integrating that with DNSSEC makes it easy to really track what's going on when keys get rolled over and all the other challenges that we see with DNSSEC. So essentially within the product, DNSSEC, and we've gone through a few iterations of our DNSSEC product that we've released, and talking to a lot of customers in terms of simplifying this process, we wanted to make this as simple as possible, sort of have a Fisher-Price type of layer that goes over the configuration, yet at the same time for users who do want to configure some of the more advanced options, those are all still available as well. So ideally, really what you want to do is just sign a zone, have a policy associated with that, and deploy that out, and then not have to worry about it again. So, in terms of configuring DNSSEC within our product, it's fairly straightforward. For recursive server, you add your typical bind options here. Our product's completely bind-based. And then subsequently, from a signing perspective, within the product, we have a DNSSEC tab that you can configure. So when you do go to a zone, you can see how it's being signed, when those keys are valid. And likewise, one of the big things that we saw actually releasing a DNSSEC product fairly early on to do beta testing and really to get input from some of our customers was DNS signing policies, right? So going beyond the fact that you'd actually have to sign individual zones or a particular view, the policies are huge, right? Like this is what's going to automate this, at its most efficient level. So being able to configure a policy, again, we use all of the NIST defaults here. Those can be changed. Likewise, this can be applied at your configuration level. So this, you can basically have this cascade down to all of your zones and views. Likewise, before, what we saw with our Trust Anchor configuration and DNSSEC validation, that can also be configured at a configuration level. So if you've got a large set of servers that you'd like all of your options to be cascaded down to, you can configure that as well. At any given time as well, you can also get a list of those of all the zones that are signed by a particular policy. So in terms of automated emergency key rollover, all of the signing of the zones and key rollovers is taken care of automatically. Once you've configured that policy, all of that information is basically taken by the appliances, and all of the zones are signed in due course as they should. Emergency key rollover is also available just by an action menu at any given zone should your keys get compromised. So some of the other things that we also solicited feedback from our customers were, what's going to make this easier from an executive level, and also from, a day-to-day, just sort of an overview to see exactly, what your environment's doing right now. And one of the big things was from a reporting perspective. So for DNSSEC, we have basically a signing summary, and we're working on a couple other reports as well from customer feedback. But this is the main one in terms of being able to basically just do a report on your entire configuration, your organization's DNSSEC deployment, and being able to see exactly what zones are signed, what signing policy they're using, all of their ZSK and KSK information, when things are about to expire, and when they're going to roll over, and if there's any problems with any of the zones that you happen to run the report on. So in terms of monitoring and notifications, again, this is something that we saw a lot of our customers were interested in, and visibility into this entire process is key in terms of knowing when your zones roll over, if there's a particular error with the way a zone is configured. So basically, within our product, you can configure DNSSEC key expiration information here, so that you can get an SMP trap or mail notifications sent to the administrators that you specify when those events occur, or if there's a problem with one of your DNSSEC signed zones. So moving forward, we're also looking into other features such as automatic emailing of, say, DS records, say you don't have that chain of trust, so up to the parent, in terms of automating that process as much as possible. So going beyond notifications and being able to, say, automatically generate a PGP signed email to a particular recipient that you've configured within the product as well. So some of the other things we're looking at in the future and what we're developing right now are basically enhanced repository support, going in and having integration with ITAR. Some of the other exciting things that Shane mentioned in terms of Bind 9.7 coming out, and RFC 5011 support, and some of the automated DLV features, being a bind-based product, we're right now looking at taking advantage of those in future versions of the product. We're also taking a look at some of the HSM modules out there and making those a modular option to some of our appliance line, especially with the advent of a lot of customers within the states, within the federal government, going and doing internal DDNS as well. That's making HSMs a very needed solution there. And like I said, reporting and monitoring enhancements, really going beyond and with the single-click deployment and whatnot and being able to configure DNSSEC very easily, a lot of it is really looking at sort of the self-healing and intelligence within the actual product itself to go further and automate that process. So in terms of, what I mentioned in terms of automatically sending encrypted emails with DS records and being a little bit smarter about it and, having that error checking built in so that we'll really avoid any of the more complicated problems that we've seen coming forward with DNSSEC. So the features that I showed to you today in terms of our making signing policies and all of our other features, those are available at the end of the week in our latest release. And as I mentioned, some of our going forward, some of these other features we look to release in early next year. So. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. And that brings us to the end of the speaker session. We do have some time for questions. So if you have a question for any of the vendors, please raise your hand. No questions. I guess we will wrap it up then. And the session will continue at 13:20, not 13. So have a nice lunch, and we'll see you back here.